Please stand by. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, YSOA on System Z. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, we'll deliver an introduction to the IBM SOA strategy with a focus on how IBM System Z participates in the strategy. We'll discuss positioning System Z with other servers, as well as why you should use System Z for the delivery of SOA value. The speaker for today's teleconference is Andrea Grego, Software Specialist, IBM Poughkeepsie Executive Briefing Center, STG. At this time, I'd like to hand it over to our speaker, Andrea Grego.
Thank you. My name is Andrea Grego. I am a software specialist in the IBM Poughkeepsie Executive Briefing Center. Today's topic is service-oriented architecture and why System Z is a good platform when you're considering moving to an SOA. So if we go to the next slide, that's slide number two, there are three key takeaways I would like everybody to walk away with. The first one is, I know not everybody is going to be up to date on what an SOA is. And at the end of this, I'd like everyone to walk away with a good feeling for what a service-oriented architecture is, what the business values are, what the gains are, things like that. The second key takeaway is I'd like you to walk away with an understanding of how System Z is a sophisticated environment and how that sophistication can actually help automate and speed and bring to value your SOA maybe quicker than other platforms or provide more longevity than other platforms. And then the last piece is I'm going to highlight some software investments that IBM is making so that we have a good understanding of, you know, what type of software runs on Z and, you know, and a good understanding of Z as a modern mainframe. Okay, so let's go to slide number three. Slide number three is, you know, the chart where we're going to talk about what an SOA really is. So to begin with, an SOA is really, it's not a product. It's not something you can run out and buy. An SOA at the end of the day is more about providing a best practice principle, so to speak, that balances your business needs with your IT. Predominantly, we see a lot of customers before, you know, this kind of explosion into SOA, we've seen a lot of businesses that were driven by their IT infrastructure. And the goal of an SOA is to allow your business to be your driver so that your IT almost becomes secondary. And I know that's easier said than done, right? I mean, a lot of times we find the limitations of our business needs or our business flexibility actually occurs at an IT level. So it's a rigidity or an inability of the IT to do what you need it to do or to do it easily or at a cost that is reasonable. So, you know, we'll talk a little bit about how, you know, your product choices and the selections you make can actually help or hurt you in an SOA principle. But at the end of the day, it's really important to understand that an SOA is achievable with any technology. An SOA is achievable regardless of the products or the information, whether it's proprietary or whether it's open source or open standards or, you know, that's almost irrelevant. However, it does impact your ability and the, like I said, the longevity and the capabilities of your SOA. Okay, so SOA is based on this idea of service orientation, which is essentially this idea of breaking up your existing technology into services, which are defined as business tasks. So we can just say a service is a granular business task. And then you take those business tasks, and through orientation and through the architecture, you actually combine them, you loosely couple them, so that they are essentially these Lego pieces that you see, and you build them as you need. So because they're loosely compiled, you can modify them on the fly, and it gives you a lot of flexibility, which is something a lot of businesses really need. And at the end of the day, when you actually achieve an SOA, whether it's on a project basis or in an enterprise level, which is a significant achievement, no doubt about it, you'll see that you're actually more aligned with your business. You'll see that, you know, Aberdeen Group down here at the bottom has identified a lot of benefits that are actually tangible, things that, you know, that you can bank on, things like the ability to, you know, align your business better, the lowered costs, right, which at the end of the day can, you know, can materialize into a higher return on investment. You know, greater visibility into your actual infrastructure so that you can plan and maintain life cycles. That's huge. A lot of customers have assets that, you know, they're not quite aware of what they even have. So it's really hard to maintain life cycles. It's really hard to you have, you know, current environments when you're not even aware of the viability of certain pieces of your enterprise. So SOA, you know, just to kind of get off this slide, SOA, you can't buy it, but you can certainly plan for it. And it's something that I encourage everybody to consider looking into. So if we go on to slide number four then, what you'll see is that IBM has defined an entry point into SOA, because SOA at the end of the day can be so encompassing, it can be so large that it's easy to become lost in the maze of, you know, things that you need to do, or, you know, it's easy to get sort of analysis paralysis and not move into actually, you know, the benefits of SOA. So IBM defined these five entry points. Three of them are business-focused, and two of them are IT-focused. And what this gives you is a good starting point based on what your needs are. Now, it's really important to understand that these entry points are not mutually exclusive. For example, if you know that the needs of your business is actually to integrate your assets, so you've got the assets in place to do what you need to do from a business perspective, but they're just not well integrated, then you would look at an IT-centric entry point, specifically connectivity, and you would look at how do I better integrate these assets. So maybe you would consider some re-architecting, whatever you needed to do, but at the end of the day, the connectivity is your main goal, right? However, along the way, as you're, you know, planning, you know, your project, and as you're looking at these additional benefits that you're going to get, you may find that, you know, by integrating your assets better, that you've actually driven your people productivity. So people are now, you know, your portals are more aligned, and that actually then you can see there's, you know, connectivity into the productivity of your people, which is a business-centric entry point, and this, you know, IT-specific entry point connectivity, as well as anytime you have solid connectivity going on, you're going to see greater productivity around reuse of your existing assets. So they're not mutually exclusive, but it gives you a consumable path to get started, and that's really important. And I will tell you that on the web, IBM has projects associated with these entry points and, you know, has some customers' experiences around these. So I encourage you to, you know, go out and look and see what other customers have done. So the next graphic that you see down here is an SOA life cycle. And it's important that once you focus on that entry point, and once you say, this is the goal, this is the project, this is what I want to get started with for my SOA or for my SOA project, it's important that you follow a life cycle. This life cycle will really help you ensure that what you deploy, you know, doesn't require, you know, a gazillion iterations, so to speak, or a never-ending cycle of is this ever done. And at the end of the day, you know, it's important to understand that it is an iterative cycle, but that the more you focus on actually modeling your SOA projects, and, you know, if, let's say, you're doing a business process management type of a project that's process-specific, you want to jump in there, you want to use some modeling tools, you want to make sure that you've actually built the flows from a business perspective, and that before you actually assemble anything, you can see how it all lays out. You can model out how it's going to fit into your bigger enterprise. This helps you identify any weak points. It helps you to save time later on where you may have made mistakes and don't realize it. So modeling is a really important part. The next part is then the assembly part. An assembly is where you actually start to build on that model. And you'll see sometimes, you know, you may be assembling, you may be working in the assembly phase, you have to go back to model, right? Something isn't working, that we missed something in the modeling phase. And that's why they're designed that way. And there's tools to get you through each of these phases. IBM has a great portfolio, especially around process, where you can actually, you know, follow this life cycle quite rigidly, and you have a set of tools to help you. And it's important also from a business perspective, you know, as we talked about process, it's important to understand that, you know, the IBM tools are designed to actually translate business needs into IT implementations. So you can think of them not only as tools to help you achieve your business goals, but tools to help your IT and your business more closely align. Then you see the deploy phase, and this is really where we start focusing on the runtime and the runtime products. And then the manage phase is, how do I manage my actual runtime? This then ties into the next phase, which is a governance-based phase, which is this last shape that you see down at the bottom, and this is where you plan, define, enable, and measure. And these phases are actually built around associating your service life cycle of, you know, once these services are deployed and your SOA is out there, back into, you know, how you actually built them. So this is a governance to help ensure that you're successful with your SOA for, you know, a long time. Okay, so let's go to slide number five then. Slide number five, the only thing I'd like to highlight on this slide is that, A, we've done some studies of our SOA projects, and of those studies, this Institute for Business Value study, 97% of customers found that their SOA project was justified just based on the cost of it, which is pretty important. 100% of the SOA projects that we surveyed increased their business flexibility. So CIO surveys that come out, that's one of the, top issues all the time is I don't have a flexible enough business. I can't adapt to change quick enough. So 100% saw business flexibility, which has been a huge issue for CIOs. And 51% saw revenue growth. And you have to think that SOA, for the most part, in the fashion that we've been looking at, is relatively new. So we're seeing some quick returns on investment here. We're seeing people pretty satisfied with this venture right from the get-go. That's really important because a lot of times there are projects that are worth the effort, but you don't really see returns on them for a significant amount of time, which makes it difficult to often fund those projects, right? We know how funding cycles work. It becomes difficult to fund projects that you don't, feel some sort of return on pretty quickly. SOA is actually, is achieving that, which is nice. Another thing I'd like to highlight is that System Z customers are actually embarking on SOAs today, and they're having levels of success. So we've highlighted a couple of cases here that I'm not going to go through. So let's go to slide number six then. I like this slide, and I'm going to spend a little bit of time here because it gives you something to really think about. We have a significant amount of assets on System Z today. I've heard estimates as $5 trillion seems to be pretty standard, and that's focused specifically on COBOL assets. And I've heard also 80% of mainframe data. 80% of corporate data exists on a mainframe. So when you have those kinds of assets that significantly and you start embarking on an SOA, it makes sense that you're going to have a significant amount of your services coming off of your mainframe. Why is this important or why is this, interesting is because, okay, so not all workloads are, ideally set to run on a mainframe. SOA, however, is changing what those workloads or what our past considerations of workloads were. For example, if you had really critical workloads with a lot of I/O requirements, we would tell you, you should be considering running that on your mainframe. It's a critical workload. It needs to be available, scalable. It needs, those qualities of service. You should consider it. Well, services, because they're shared and because they're centralized and because they have such a multitude of business environments that need access to them, what you find is that criticality of those services is actually driven up by the amount of usage that you see for it. For example, if you look at this little graphic here, this blue orb up in the corner represents, workloads that we would say, these are becoming more and more critical, right? The business impact, if you look on the axis on the left, the y-axis, you'll see that this is actually a cost. There's a cost associated with these workloads. And the criticality, which is reflected on the x-axis, as you move off to the right, it becomes a more critical workload. So you can see this blue orb is representative of what we traditionally have said is a Z deployment, something you might want to consider to deploy on Z. Not to say you can't, that it's not feasible to do it anywhere else, but Z is a very viable and, significant platform for these types of workloads or meeting the needs of these types of workloads. So something interesting is happening. If you look at this little personal productivity, you can see this kind of line that shoots up to that shared service, that pink orb. So if I embarked on a departmental SOA project, let's say, and I had a personal productivity application that was shared at a department level, let's say. Let's say it's, some faction in your company, some department in your company built an application. It's a good application. It works for the department. Okay, it's now part of an SOA, a departmental SOA, let's say. So they've embarked some of these principles, some of these best practices, and they've built a little SOA around their department. Okay, so when you start accessing that, let's say that department application is something that actually other departments have as well. In an SOA, you're not going to have multiple, right? You break out those services. You're not going to say, I need a separate service for each of these departments. That just doesn't make sense, right? That goes against the principles of centralizing and sharing those core services. Now, all of a sudden, you have scalability issues because you're going to get rid of those excess or those redundant departmental services. You're going to focus on one departmental service to be shared among the various departments. So now you have personal productivity has actually taken a couple of steps up because now it's beyond a small department using it. It's gone to multiple departments using it. Now let's say I don't know what that service would be, but let's just say that that service also has applicability outside of departments. So now all of a sudden you have something that started really relatively small and sort of a grassroots effort that's gotten very big, and it has a certain set of requirements. So as you're moving up the business impact chain and the workload criticality chain, that service requires a heftier quality of service than what you had originally planned. It makes sense to deploy services like that to Z. It makes sense to deploy it to Z because of a set of qualities of service that we're going to focus on in the oncoming charts. So it's important also to understand that, while the first department started their, SOA project thinking within the scope of the department, right, it was easy for that to rapidly become bigger, 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 more. And having, Z in-house and having the ability to scale to the high-end mainframe is a perfect thing for an SOA, because it actually then tells you that you can start small and you can grow. And that's some of the things that we're gonna talk about a little bit as we move on. So I'd like to just keep that thought in mind. The SOAs actually sort of tend to take on a life of their own, and that the success that you feel at a smaller level, at a project level, then starts to kind of creep, right? You're going to want to feel those same benefits and those same values, let's say, within your greater enterprise. Okay, so let's go on then to slide number 7. And I just really love this graphic. A lot of people and a lot of companies have mainframes in-house that are older. Let's call them quote-unquote legacy technology. And so when they think of a mainframe, they'll think of that graphic, of that man sitting there with the tape spinning and, his typewriter cranking. And it's a scary image because it's not quite where we're really at. And I like to say that if you think that that's the way it is, then you maybe haven't been paying attention. IBM just made a new announcement, a pretty exciting announcement, actually, about cell broadband engine integration into the IBM mainframe. For those of you that aren't familiar with the broadband engine, it's actually a microprocessor that has unique capabilities for applications. So it's a lot of, at this point, it's kind of gaming-focused. So specifically for things like video, 3D graphics, or, kind of high-performance computation of imaging, security, visualization. It's obviously, it extends beyond, a gaming type of an environment and has applicability, I think, across the boards in healthcare, surveillance, things like that. But this chip is actually built on power architecture, and it's a screaming kind of a chip, so to speak, right? It's very, very, fast. We're actually integrating it back into the mainframe to get those qualities of service or those capabilities of the mainframe that we're going to cover, but combine them with sort of a modern spin and really setting the stage here for a really sophisticated platform for the 3D internet, which is coming rapidly. And it's sort of that next wave of technology. I mean, technology tends to be very evolutionary. And this is sort of, we've kind of peaked, I think, for a little bit, hit a little bit of a plateau, and here we're seeing, significant advancements. And I'm really excited to say that the mainframe is going to be center to those advancements. So this should set the stage then for us to kind of go into the next set of slides. So slide number 8 then is I think probably a standard slide that a lot of people have seen. I like to include it for a very simple fact. If you envisioned that, older man sitting at the dated mainframe, then this will be something that you probably haven't considered. And it's the fact that System Z supports open standards. System Z is as viable as any other platform to handle new business workloads. When you're looking at, Java applications, or you're looking at, business process flows, via BPEL, Z is as good a platform as any to support those types of standards, which means that it actually integrates back into your greater enterprise and can provide you, a hub, so to speak, for those critical services that we mentioned before. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of those qualities of service. I've alluded to them. A lot of people who are familiar with the mainframe hear about qualities of service quite frequently, and now we're going to get into what that actually means. So let's go to slide number 9. Availability. Availability is one of those things that, people plan for. Definitely it's something most businesses plan for, but it's not really important until you don't have it, right? It's not something that we put money on until it's gone, and then we say, oh, no availability. Now all of a sudden you see significant costs. I have a couple of little charts in here. The first one shows you what a minute of downtime can bring you. You can see from it from a supply chain application, you can your estimated outage cost is $11,000 a minute. Significant. ATMs run at about $3,500 a minute. So when one ATM goes down in your chain, I mean, if it's not up in a very reasonable amount of time, you know, that's a significant thing. Plus, you know, you also experience, especially for customer-facing type of applications, you experience a loss of trust, right? If I go to an ATM and it's down, I'm probably pretty annoyed. If I go to an ATM and it's down more than once, I might not go back there. So significant, you know, there is significant. And the chart down at the lower part of the slide actually reflects what the actual uptime is for certain environments. You can see Z is a 5.9 environment, which means it's a best-in-class server, which means you have 0.09 hours of downtime per year. Now, what does that mean? So a lot of folks will say, well, it's 5.9 availability at a server level. So as you start laying software and, you know, applications and things like that, there's a chance that that actually impacts those 5.9s. So the server may be running at 5.9s. It does not mean that the rest of the application environment or the rest of the software stack experiences that. Z is a little bit different. We leverage on our ZOS software stack, we leverage in WebSphere and in a lot of the integrated type of web server products built on top of things like the application server. We actually leverage the platform. So you see 5.9s of availability in a ZOS environment actually applies up that software stack, and that's really important. And 5.9s of availability then takes you into, you know, the ability to avoid planned and unplanned outages. Z has a superior change management and maintenance type of environment. So you actually can roll out maintenance and not have to worry about taking out your whole environment. And then, you know, the latest, you know, focus for a lot of businesses has been on disaster recovery, right? In the wake of 9/11, in the wake of New Orleans, I think we've been forced to stand up and say, oh, you know, it's bad enough when these horrible catastrophic events occur, but then when you lose your infrastructure, right, you're causing a lot more pain. So it's important to have a resilient infrastructure in place to help those people that go through something terrible like that. And GDPS actually now enables you to have a parallel sysplex across many, many, many miles. So you can have these, you know, a data center in Texas is backed up to a data center in Maine or wherever. That's important so that you can keep those, you know, you can keep your business going. So availability, certainly not something to be taken lightly. Huge quality of service. So let's go on to slide number 10 then, security. This is one of my favorites. I actually went out and pulled the 2006 Computer Crime and Security Survey, the FBI survey. It's been coming out every year, I think, for like 10 or 11 years now. And this is the first year, I'm happy to say, this is the first year in quite a significant amount of time that we've actually seen a reduction in security losses. However, it's still significant with the total losses for 2006 sitting at about, you know, $52.5 million. When you're looking at the fact that, you know, 80% of corporate data exists on mainframes, and we have about $5 trillion in core COBOL assets, I should clarify that, you know, security is a huge issue. And security is a huge issue not only, you know, for the fact that all that information resides there, because I think a lot of times people don't think about, you know, access of you know, inside access, so to speak. Once you have a mainframe, you feel pretty confident that, you know, your security is set there. However, I think one of the top, you know, this list here is the top 10 list. So I've taken this chart and I've modified it. It's a much bigger list. I just grabbed the top 10 dollar amount losses. And one of the things I thought was pretty interesting is that unauthorized access sits at number 2 with a $10 million price tag attached to it. And unauthorized access is, you know, someone not supposed to have access to your information that does. When you look at Z, you have a unique environment there because it's all role-based and you can actually, you know, clarify who inside your company has access to what. And Z also has some significant security server type of environments. So you'll see that we are EAL 5 certified and we're also FIPS 140 level 4 security certified. So that's good stuff. We have tape encryption now for tapes, which was something that I know, you know, it was a huge requirement for companies, is I want not only my data on the mainframe to be secure, I want it off the mainframe to be secure as well. So when I provide backup tapes and I roll the stuff into my library, I don't want it to be accessible. I want it to be encrypted. And most importantly, we have crypto on board. So even if you do nothing else, even if you don't support RackF on your server, even if you don't support additional security products, you have security built into the server, which is very unique. Is the only, in fact, the only server that does that, and huge quality of service, right? Something that you don't necessarily put a price tag on until something goes wrong. Okay, so let's go on to slide number 11 then. And this is where we're going to look at virtualization, another quality of service, right? Another thing that we often take for granted or don't actually consider it, you know, when we're looking at server platforms and where to deploy, you know, services for a service-oriented architecture. So it's important to understand that Z, as a, you know, Z's been doing virtualization for a really long time. And a lot of companies now are touting virtualization as this new big thing, and Z's had it. Z has it in a, at a Linux level. Z has it at a ZOS level. So Z has virtualization, and in most cases, it's really pretty untouchable by other platforms. I think it is a world-class virtualization environment. It allows you a couple of advantages, right? There's virtualization at a hardware level, and there's virtualization at a software level. So there's this ability of this entire server to be virtualized. So you can actually, you know, virtualize your processors. You can share processors so that as work changes or as your work needs changes, which we'll cover a little bit in terms of priorities on the next slide, you know, the right amount of resources can always be allocated. So it's a very dynamic virtualization environment. And this is something that, you know, what's in a word? What's in a term? Virtualization across platforms is not the same. So it's important to understand that while we're talking about virtualization, when you look at Z, you're talking about significant more capability, significant more functionality at a virtualization level. And a lot of that comes from the fact that we have this hypervisor dimension, which is actually all about virtualizing between your hardware and your software. And this allows you to even share things like, you know, I/O. So you can actually virtualize your I/O channels so that, you know, higher priority has access to this. So virtualization on a ZBox is really something that is significantly different than virtualization in other environments. So watch what you call things, right? If they're called the same thing, it causes some significant problems. So let's go to slide number 12 then. And this is where we're going to briefly touch on differentiation of workloads. Z as a virtualized platform supporting, you know, thousands of servers, you know, in our enterprise class boxes, I think you can have upwards of like 60-something LPARs, and on those 60 LPARs, you can run multiple virtual servers. So you see that, you know, you can rapidly have, you know, thousands of servers running or thousands of, you know, more than thousands of workloads running on this box. It's important that when you have that much consolidation of various and differentiated workloads, very diverse workloads, it's really, really critical to understand that not all of these workloads are created equal. And so what you see in ZOS is this workload management. Now, again, what's in a name, right? Workload management is a pretty common term, right? System P has workload management. Other Unix environments have some set of some semblance of workload management. Is it the same as Z? No, it's not. They're not even remotely the same. Z is able to, via virtualization and via prioritization, right? Workload manager, a ZOS workload manager, actually ties into the core of your system Z Enterprise of all the workloads running in Z Enterprise and is able to make decisions based on resources, right? It's this tight integration of all these various components at a Z level that allows your system to understand that your web application server workload has this kind of a priority, and when it's set against, you know, your DB2 workload, you know, this one takes priority over that one, right? We can put Kix in there, we can put vSAM in there, and all of a sudden, you know, you're looking at, you know, hundreds of different workloads, and you're able to say, you know, for my bank, the most important thing I can do is close this, you know, $1 million loan. So if you have a crunch time where, you know, your system's been running at over 100% and it just doesn't have the capability to handle everything that's going on, it knows what is a droppable thing or what could be queued for later consumption, right? Because you also have to bring into consideration, and something we'll cover a little bit more in the software section, is that now we have software that enables you to run batch workloads in conjunction with your online, you know, traditional daily workloads. So what you see is, you know, high-level OLTP running alongside long-running workloads. It becomes even more important in an environment like that that you have something at an enterprise, quote-unquote enterprise level, and I think the enterprise at this point as Z, because ZOS WLM is really only aware of what's happening on Z. But in many companies, what's happening on Z is 80% of the company's business. So that ability to dynamically and autonomically make allocations as it needs to and to prioritize on the fly is a pretty critical resource. Okay, so let's go on now to slide number 13. And we've kind of talked, we've talked quite a bit about the qualities of service, right? We've covered virtualization. We've covered workload management. We've covered availability and security. Now we're going to talk about TCO, or the total cost of running workloads, because there's very often a perception that the mainframe is, you know, the most expensive place to run your work. And that's not a fair assessment. It's actually come to light. We've had more and more customers stand up and willing to testify and give testimonials that, in fact, Z is the cheapest place to do work. It's just costed differently. And without doing an in-depth kind of a study on, you know, or not even in-depth, but without really considering, you know, how your accounting practices are within your company and how your mainframe is actually, you know, how the money is being spent, it's easy to say, well, it costs me 10 times more to run on a mainframe than it does on a distributed platform. And at the end of the day, it could be 10 times cheaper. And, you know, you just really are basing it on information that's not always accurate or not always easy to attain. So a couple of areas where TCO on the mainframe is really good. The first one is power and space, which a lot of companies during the, 90s, or even late 80s, early 90s, really embarked on these huge distributed server farms. And what they found was that scaling in an environment like that really required adding lots and lots of boxes. And those boxes had people expense associated with them, but more importantly, they required space and they required power. They required power not only to keep going, but then they required power to cool because of, you know, those server farms give off a lot of heat. When it's 90 degrees in Manhattan and you're, you know, cranking out your data center at like 120 and you have just air conditioners going nonstop, I mean, that's a very costly environment, especially in this day and age. So what you see here is two different comparisons. You see the SystemZ 9 Enterprise class against the Sunfire X2100. So what's important about this is to notice that from a kilowatt perspective or from a consumption perspective, we're not even talking about the same scale. Right, you know, you can see that as the workload grew, so did the requirement, you know, for the sunbox, so did the requirement for the space, and so did the requirement for the power, and it's almost on a linear level. That's really scary. You'll also notice that on the ZBox, as you increase your processors to handle that additional workload, you did see some scale up in terms of power, but it really flattened right off. And what you'll notice is that you don't require any additional. Right, you're talking about just scaling up a single box or scaling up, you know, two boxes as opposed to scaling up hundreds of potential boxes. Huge advantage there from a consolidation perspective. But then it also ties back into how many people do I need to operate this? And what you can say is, what Gartner has found that from 2001 to 2004, our ops staff or the operations staff required to run our mainframe significantly fell in light of the fact that MIPS on the mainframe significantly grew. So we have an interesting trend happening there. That trend continues today. Another way you can look at this, and this was a study done by Arcady for us, called the Dinosaur Myth, and they did a 2005 update of this, is that the cost of running a transaction for an end user, so what does it cost me to run these boxes or these workloads from an end-user perspective. And what you can see is that the mainframe is significantly cheaper from an end-user perspective. And that's important from a transactional standpoint, right? The end-user, in most cases, that are providing the transactions. So let's go on to slide number 14 then. And what we're going to cover here is the customizability, for lack of a better word, of your mainframe. It's a unique environment, and I love the uniqueness of it for the simple fact that, you know, when you buy a mainframe, you sort of have all these options. So you have all these various options from MIPS ratings or MSU ratings and how big you want your box to be. But then you can buy a box and you can grow that box to meet the workloads that you're going to run on it. For example, we have these specialty engines now. There's ZIPS, there's ZAPS, and IFLs. It sounds like something out of a bad Dr. Seuss poem, but at the end of the day, we have ZAPS, which actually provide you an offload rate, a one-time charge engine to offload Java MIPS. What does this mean? This means if you're running WebSphere or native Java on the mainframe, you can customize your mainframe to run that workload more efficiently. And it drives down your MIPS ratings, right, because you pay for the engine once, you turn it on, and it starts, you know, offloading those MIPS from your Java workload. Average offload rate just from turning the engine on is 60%. If you optimize your applications to really take advantage of that offload rate, you can see up to 90%. Significant, right? And then you're not paying for those MIPS again. You've already paid for them. You paid for that engine. You're done. And there's no development impact, right? I mean, you could opt to customize your applications, but right off the get-go, any application is looking at a solid chance of 60%. So it's pretty good. IFLs then bring Linux on the mainframe. So this is an engine that's dedicated to running Linux. This is, again, you know, if you're a significant Linux shop, or if you're even not a significant Linux shop and you just don't want to tie up your existing general processor resources, you know, you run an IFL. Buy an IFL, buy two IFLs, run significant workloads there. And now that you have a starting point for the mainframe, you know, with the business class machines coming in at, you know, under $100,000, a couple of these specialty engines all of a sudden make this a very viable offering, and you can run significant amount of MIPS because these are full-speed engines. So if you buy a lower-end box that might not have the equivalent enterprise class engine speed, these engines are exactly that. So even on a BC box, you can run full-speed engines and take advantage of those offload rates. Zips, again, are for data serving. So they're specialty designed to actually offload, you know, certain DB2 MIPS, for lack of a better word. And there's a specialty focus there on what it will offload and what it won't. But if you have middleware, if you have applications coming in from off the mainframe or coming in via JDBC or Type 4 connections, Zips can actually offload some of that overhead and make it a much more efficient and cost-efficient environment. The last thing I'll cover, and just really briefly, is data power. We now have appliances that have kind of taken the world by storm and actually provide significance if you're using your mainframe to do, messaging, if you're an MQ environment or a message broker environment, you know, data power provides a significant offload rate from an XML perspective, but also from a transformation support and a web service support. It's a security appliance, and it provides significant advantage on the mainframe, especially for new workloads. So the last section I want to cover here is going to be around software. And I have a lot of software crammed in here because I could have had like a whole hour where we just spoke about software, and I thought it was more important to give a holistic picture of a view of the whole, a more encompassing view of the mainframe as opposed to, just focusing on the software, because it's important to understand, if you go to slide number 15, our software or SystemZ is not different than our IBM software for other platforms. And we've really leveled the playing field from a software perspective. Yes, we still have things like Kix that run in our traditional mainframe workloads, but all of our WebSphere, all of our current WebSphere workloads are viable to run on the mainframe, whether it's Z-Linux or ZOS installations. So let's look at what our portfolio looks like, our software portfolio, from these entry points. We talked about these entry points, and let's kind of give them a little bit of meat and apply some products that might make sense to you. So, for example, the first one is people. So people productivity is this entry point, and the whole basis of this entry point is how do I enable my people to do their job more effectively, more efficiently, and to leverage the existing IT resources that they should have access to. And this is seen via products like WebSphere Portal Server, which is it's a very advanced product. It's actually built on top of this process environment that we have, and then leverages portal technology to actually tie together things. So you can do like workflows, you can do some advanced portal design, and you can actually enable multiple customers or multiple employees to access various information. So it's very authorization-based. You can log into one portal, and you might log in as so-and-so and have access to a whole different set of resources. So it really ties together what can be a very confusing, intranet or whatever your environment consists of. It ties it together so that you actually have a simple portal in, and then from there, you know, depending on who you are and what you have access to, you know, the world is at your fingertips. That's a real nice way to do this. Now, it can be done from both an application perspective, like we talked about portal, but you can also look at, you know, people productivity from something like a communication standpoint. And we see email. I think email is an interesting example. So, you know, we have Lotus Domino, which actually runs, Lotus Notes servers. Lotus Notes is an email environment and provides, for a lot of companies, you know, their email infrastructure or their corporate mail infrastructure. Email is rapidly becoming a critical corporate asset. If you said this 10 years ago, people would have said email is not that important, right? If my email goes down, whatever. Well, now, if your email goes down, a lot of people feel like they can't work without their email. So it's really, again, a critical asset. And criticality, as we talked about before, kind of warrants the consideration of Zing. So let's look at the next entry point, and this is process. And process is really about taking, you know, your business applications and raising the bar, so to speak. And we have a couple ways that we can raise the bar. The first one is BPEL support, right? It's business process execution language, which is literally the ability to translate business into a technical execution. And we have tools to support that, and there's a number of tools that actually play. We spoke about that life cycle, which starts with the idea of modeling, and we have a business modeler. And the business modeler is really designed for the business folks in your enterprise to sit down and model out what the business needs are, because at the end of the day, the technical folks are not going to be able to model out your business needs. And nor should they be able to. So the business modeler essentially becomes a blueprint of the business needs. Then you can come in with, another product, let's say, to focus more on how do I actually then implement that. And your implementation can come from any of the development tools, like a rational tool or, a WebSphere developer for Z tool, depending on if you're just looking at COBOL or PL1 or something beyond just straight Java. Although it can also do that. Then you can look at something called WebSphere Integration Developer. And WID is actually, the short name, WID, is a very interesting tool because it actually ties or becomes kind of that translation standpoint that I spoke about earlier between the business and the technology. So the Integration Developer actually lays some of that, some of that plumbing, so to speak, that would often be difficult to program. So it's really almost like a quote-unquote sort of a template environment where it actually applies some of the code, avoiding you having to write the code and also avoiding for you to have to understand, some of these business needs. So the modeler ties then right into the integration developer so you can take the half-formed product via, Rational or whatever your development tool is and tie it right into WID. And WID then lays that plumbing, like I said. And then from a runtime perspective, so we kind of touched on Assemble. Now let's look at, from a business standpoint, let's look at, actually deploying this with Process Server, which is built on top of the application server as a core runtime, but provides a significant additional amount of support for things like advanced business process flows, right? It's built on a BPEL environment, and we have new standards coming out in BPEL, some of them around human-centric workflow, which is pretty important. Human intervention into the business process is more often than not a huge advantage. Automated business flows are very advantageous, don't get me wrong. But inserting people into those business flows where they need to be at a point in time that they need to be and incorporating them or automating them as much as you would any of your other, process flows can actually enable you to get significant more advantage out of that. So that's your runtime. Then the last piece is, again, back up to the tools here, is this business monitor actually now enables you, once you've supported your business process flows and you've put them out there, the monitor enables you to see how is this really all working? Where do I have issues? Do I need to go back to the modeler? And there's, the set of tools that actually now has created a translation center. You started very business specific. You ended up at a process environment, which is very IT specific. And then you have a monitor, which actually then kind of blends those two worlds. And if you need assistance, we actually have we acquired a product called Webify last year. And Webify has actually now become a new part of our portfolio called WebSphere Business Services Fabric, which is an industry-specific solution. It's an encompassing solution. It covers the runtime, the tooling, and covers some set of services. So, it's a big deliverable for us around the business process space, which is rapidly becoming one of the more important aspects of SOA. And then the last piece where we have some advancements is information. I'm sure there are a lot more advancements in this, but I focus specifically on Z, and I focus specifically on DB2, which is really the lifeblood of our data environment on Z. Okay, so let's go now to slide number 16. Now, the previous slide, we covered the business focus. Now we're going to cover the IT focus. And the IT focus was centered around those two entry points, reuse and connectivity. So for the first one, reuse, we have a whole rational asset portfolio around both development but all sorts of management and modeling tools that are focused on Z, because at the end of the day, Z is the enterprise hub for a significant amount of assets. And reuse becomes critical in terms of how do I most cost effectively, we talked about SOA providing, cost benefits, which is a driving factor for a lot of companies, in addition to the flexibility and the ability to marriage, to marry your business needs into your IT, you're expecting cost savings. Reusing your existing assets can be a huge part of that cost environment. But again, to reuse those assets, you have to understand where they are, how they exist, and how you can tap into them. And there, actually, I have an interesting estimate to throw in there. I spoke earlier about $5 trillion in core COBOL assets. Somebody did an assessment on what it would cost to actually re-architect those, because that was a big, that was kind of a big move not that long ago towards, I'm just going to re-architect the solution off-platform, or I'm going to re-architect my quote-unquote legacy environment. And those $5 trillion in COBOL assets would cost you $20 trillion to re-architect. So you have a four-time cost differential, and I think that might have been on the lean side, right? Usually it's about five times. What you have is about five times more to re-architect it. So sometimes using what you have is the best way to go. And it can't always be done, I understand that. So we have some tools to help you understand what you have. So Rational, like I said, has a huge portfolio designed at Z, at reusing, identifying, and developing, those assets as reusable components. We have WebSphere Studio Asset Analyzer, which actually is a really neat tool. It creates literally an asset map. And this is important because, A, a lot of customers don't understand what assets they actually have, and, B, they don't understand how those assets tie back into other assets. So they don't understand the relationships. And WebSphere Studio Asset Analyzer can give you that. Then we have the developer for System Z, which I mentioned before, and that's a tool that's focused. It's built on Eclipse, the same as Rational Application Developer. The primary difference between the two is that WebSphere Developer for System Z, which has now been rebranded back into the Rational family, which is a good sign, provides COBOL and PL1 support as well as, and so a variety of other things. But it's designed for not only just Java programming, but it's designed for enterprise. EGL type programming as well. From a runtime perspective, we've had a number of kind of big announcements. The first one is Kix Transaction Server. We have a new version of Kix Transaction Server out there. A lot of hoopla about it because it's very, very SOA friendly from an open standards perspective, right? There's been huge investments in web services and how do I, take my existing Kix assets, which for a lot of mainframe customers is a big part of their business. How do I make it, more consumable? How do I make it, a bigger part of my enterprise? So how do I take those assets which have such value and extend that value? And so Kix Transaction Server, that's sort of the theme for the new version, is being a part of the bigger whole and actually integrating and playing friendly with the other products. Another product that just recently announced a new version is WebSphere Extended Deployment. And we've seen a big pickup of this product from customers who are interested in doing batch modernization. There's a lot of core batch capabilities in the ZOS, the WebSphere Extended Deployment, the ZOS product. It's also in the distributed product as well, but the ZOS product in particular has been of interest to customers because of the ability to modernize their Z batch workloads, and it plays very well with other products like JSOS, which is a Java version of native batch. So it enables you a Java ability to leverage your native batch. And so you see a lot around the batch workloads and specifically there. And then other products as well. We have the application server, we have IMS, ZTPF, all of them which are, continuing to build on this SOA momentum. Okay, and then from an embracing the SOA perspective, we have the Web Tier Service Registry and Repository. We talked earlier that governance was a key part of ensuring the ongoing success of your SOA. So once you followed the life cycle to develop and deploy your SOA, it was important to have some sort of life cycle for the governance aspect. And Web Tier Service Registry and Repository plays heavily into that space. It's not only, a metadata repository for all of your services, right, which in an environment where you have $5 trillion in core assets, you can easily have, hundreds, if not thousands, of services being broken out of those. You're going to need something to manage and maintain that environment, and that's where the registry and repository fits in. Plus, it also integrates back into other products like Kix, MQ and Message Broker plays heavily into the messaging space. So there's, a significant amount of integration and future integration being planned for this product. So as customers embark on SOA, the objective here is to make it even easier for you to declare these are services, deposit them into my repository. And then the last focus that we'll cover briefly is connectivity. And connectivity is, again, we mentioned an IT-specific entry point into SOA. So it gives you the end goal there is to connect your existing assets, and some of the goals of that could be reuse, could be process, could be anything, but at the end of the day, connectivity becomes the backbone. Without connectivity, the rest of these are hard-pressed to succeed. And we've had, again, advancements in this space. We have the ESB, which is now out on Z. We've had Message Broker, which, has been out on Z and continues to make significant strides, again, with things like, integrating with the registry repository. MQ continues to dominate on the Z space from a messaging perspective. And there have been other advancements there as well. And connectivity is a key part of our portfolio. So let's go on to slide number 17, and here's just an example of a customer that's been successful with a mainframe, and I chose them to highlight on because they're a pretty interesting company. Aurora Healthcare is a publicly owned healthcare provider, so it's not a private firm. Their goal is to, stay low on the radar. Their goal is to deliver, a quality product at a low cost. And they focused and centered on the mainframe, which I thought was really pretty interesting. And they did it to create this portal environment. Now, they didn't use WebSphere Portal. They used the application server as their primary portal environment, which they could do. So they wrote some custom code to make that happen. But what's really interesting here is that, okay, so they're running on ZOS 1.6 on their Z environment. They were able to build and deploy 70 applications in 36 months. And those 70 applications then make up the brunt of the application resources that are then feeding this portal. And this portal is doing a whole bunch of things from logistics to, their messaging type of environments, to help their people productivity, to their hospital management, to their employee payroll. So you can see it's a significant variety of applications underneath there feeding all of these unique business needs. And the fact that they were able to build and deploy 70 brand new applications in 36 months is a really significant investment. It's also a testament to how WebSphere Application Server on ZOS has some advantages. They were able to really effectively streamline their test and production environments, their test and production environments because of the fact that they were able to so rapidly roll out new environments as they needed them because of the simplicity of doing that on a mainframe. So this was a huge advantage. It wasn't like adding new boxes. It was like, rolling out a new LPAR, isolating it, it's your test. And on the same side, you can have a separate set of LPARs that are production. And, very simple for them to do this. And the fact that they chose to do it on Z, you know, is another testament. The fact, Dwayne Weissenberg, who is the Vice President of Enterprise Application Development, said that he really focused on System Z because of the open support. So because of the open standards and the open environment of Z, it was critical to their success, as was things like the ability to centralize and share, you know, DB2 data stores, the ability to, you know, run in a parallel sysplex. The idea that sharing everything enabled them to really quickly change and manage the, you know, any new you know, business needs was another critical success. And the fact that they were able to deploy things like Zaps and really customize their environment, again, made it a very cost-effective environment. So they did significant consolidation, so to speak, right? Because if you think 70 applications in distributed environments in general, you know, short of high-end P environments, when you think of most distributed environments, it's a one-to-one mapping, one processor for one application, which can be a one-to-one server, right? So you could say, okay, we need 70 production applications. That doesn't handle peak. That doesn't handle test. So you could be looking at a server farm to manage this. So Z gave them the ability to consolidate and also to save money and to do it really cost-effectively. So I just really like that story. So let's go to 18. This is really a summary chart. We talked a lot about quality of service. We talked a lot about the mainframe being unique, but also being compatible, right? It's operationally superior, but it's architecturally compatible. So it fits back into the bigger enterprise, but it does it better and more sophisticated than most other platforms can achieve. And a lot of that is the fact that it's been 40 years in the making. So just because we've been around for a long time doesn't mean that it's not, you know, a fully modern environment for applications and workloads. Okay, so let's go to slide number 19. Now, this is just a brief overview of some of the Get Started with SOA System Z services that are available. I've given you a link down at the bottom if you're interested in learning more. You know, it's important that customers understand that they're not alone. And sometimes the whole path to an SOA, even if we break it down and we say, well, there's entry points and, you know, you can do it this way, we have a life cycle, but we've got other customer stories and, you know, testimonials that you can leverage. It's not always that easy, and sometimes it's nice to be able to say, I need some help. And so here's, you know, some help available if you're interested in learning more. Okay, slide number 20, then, is pretty much what we're going to close with. And this is IBM's Impact event, which is happening May 20th. It's a big event. It's a combination of multiple conferences that we had in the past. One of them is a transaction and messaging conference. The other one is the WebSphere Technical Exchange. So you'll see a huge mainframe agenda here, as well as, you know, open, you know, like WebSphere tracks and WebSphere agendas. There's technical agendas and business agendas. So this is really a conference designed to meet the needs of the whole company, from both, you know, an IT executive right down to an actual, you know, technical layman. So please, I encourage you to check it out, learn more about it, and, you know, attend if you can. Okay, and with that, I'm done. I'm ready for questions, and I'll turn this back over to the moderator.
Thank you very much, Andrea. Now we'd like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we'll have a live Q&A with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us. We appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. And to participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before you make your selection. First, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for just a moment. Next, we'd like you to rate the level of technical information presented in the teleconference. If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. Or if it was more technical than you needed to hear, press star 3. Again, we'll pause. Question number 3, are you currently implementing an SOA project on your mainframe? If yes, press star 1, or if no, press star 2. Question number four, are you looking to implement an SOA project on your mainframe? If you are, in the next 6 months, press star 1, or in the next 12 months, press star 2. A third option, I'm sorry, not planning on using the mainframe in an SOA project, press star 3. So in the next 6 months, star 1, 12 months, star 2, or not planning, star 3. We'll continue in just a moment. And finally, we hope that you've enjoyed the teleconference. We'd like you to let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If you would like more information or follow-up, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And that will conclude our survey. Thank you again for your participation. Now we'd like to move on to taking your questions. To ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Again, that's star 1 for questions. While we're waiting for our first question, I'd like to turn the call back over to Andrea while we wait for our first question. Once again, if you have any questions, press star 1 now, please. First up, we have a question from Nick Haranbarana. Nick, your line is open.
Oh, hi. I have a question regarding the product pricing. What is the IBM software pricing structure on System C compared with Intel or Unix-based? For example, the WebSphere Enterprise Service Bus or the WebSphere Application Server. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So from a WebSphere perspective, our middleware products are all OTC products. They're called one-time charge, which is similar to what you experience on distributed or Unix, Intel type of environments in that you pay for some, you know, on an OTC side, you pay based on value units, which is actually something that we've recently moved our middleware from distributed platforms to value units as well. And the value units are based on the rating of the machine. However, with that said, we went from a per-processor pricing perspective on distributed platforms, where we've been value unit based on ZOS for quite some time. So the value units are based on the rating of the machine, but there is no continuity between value units on an MSU-based System Z box to value units on a System P or a System I environment. So we're priced differently from what those value units constitute, but the idea behind value unit-based pricing is the same. So I'm not even sure, I'm not sure if you were purchasing before on a per-processor basis and have no experience with value units, in which case I would encourage you, there's a lot of information out on the web where you can read about, our pricing. We do have a different price point between a ZOS deployment and a Unix environment. However, on a Linux-based environment on Z, we're priced the same. So you pay exactly the same to run your WebSphere, your middleware environments on Linux on System Z. You pay differently to run them on ZOS.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
And again, just a reminder that if you have any questions, it's star 1 on your phone, please. Well, at this point, it appears that we have no further questions. So, Andrea, I'll turn things back over to you for any additional or closing remarks before we close out today.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to thank everybody for joining and that we intend to do some follow-ups. I would encourage anybody that has you know, any areas they would like to see covered in more depth. I mean, this one was geared towards more of a beginner type audience to SOA. If you would like to see some further presentations or see us delve into some specific areas, please feel free to send me a note with your recommendations. You can reach out to me at agrego@us.ibm.com. That's agrego@us.ibm.com. We would love to deliver to you exactly the information you'd like to hear. So please let us know, and thank you.
Thanks again, everyone. That will conclude today's conference call. Again, have a good day.